In 1978, poet Audre Lorde felt a lump in her breast and entered a three-week limbo of terror. The tumor was benign, but something irrevocable had shifted. She'd glimpsed her own mortality, and suddenly every unspoken word felt like a betrayal. I was going to die, if not sooner than later, whether or not I had ever spoken myself, she realized. 2 years later, cancer returned, this time malignant. What emerged from that crucible wasn't just a survivor's tale, but a revolutionary manifesto that exploded how we think about illness, identity, and power. Writing as a Black, lesbian, feminist, mother, poet, Lorde refused to compartmentalize her experience into neat medical categories. Instead, she transformed her cancer journals into a searing political document that challenged the medical establishment, rejected beauty standards that erase women's reality, and insisted that silence, not truth-telling, poses the greatest danger to our survival. What kills us isn't always the disease itself, but the suffocating silence surrounding it. Lorde discovered this truth viscerally during those weeks of waiting for her biopsy results. The weight of unspoken fears, of death, disfigurement, abandonment, pressed down harder than any physical tumor. My silences had not protected me, she declares with startling clarity. Your silence will not protect you. Lorde's journal captures illness with startling intimacy. I woke up in the recovery room feeling as if a hot iron bar was laid across my chest and knowing the tumor was malignant. Cancer arrives not as a medical problem, but as an existential rupture. What distinguishes her account is her refusal to fragment herself into acceptable pieces. I am not only a casualty, I am also a warrior, she insists, experiencing illness through her complete identity, a Black, lesbian, feminist, mother-lover poet, all I am. Rather than separating her body from her politics, her sexuality from her survival, Lorde flips conventional logic. Silence itself is the wound, festering beneath the surface, preventing healing and connection. She particularly addresses Black women, for whom visibility has historically meant vulnerability, yet insists this visibility simultaneously provides their greatest strength. Speaking our truth isn't self-indulgent confession, but political action. When we voice our experiences with illness, discrimination, or fear, we create pathways for others to follow, transforming private suffering into shared understanding and collective power. Lorde's journal documents her struggle to reconnect with her altered body. Initially numb and alienated, she gradually reclaimed herself through deliberate self-touch. I have made love to myself again, slowly, with attention, she writes. This reclamation of erotic power became central to healing, challenging medical frameworks that treat sexuality as secondary to survival. Throughout, she was sustained by a network of woman support, friends who brought blankets, researched treatments, cared for her children, and surrounded her with fierce, practical love. Lorde's most radical act was refusing breast prosthesis, not personal preference, but political statement. She challenged the American Cancer Society's Reach for Recovery program, which treats breast cancer primarily as a cosmetic problem. The volunteer who visited proudly demonstrated her prosthesis. In her tight foundation garment, both looked equally unreal to me. This emphasis on appearance reflects society's view of women as decorative objects. The attitude toward prosthesis reflects the American cancer establishment's approach, get back to normal as quickly as possible, meaning get back to being invisible. Lorde refuses this mandate, won't hide her changed body to make others comfortable, won't pretend cancer didn't fundamentally alter her physical reality. 10 days post-surgery, Lorde visited her doctor wearing an African Kennet cloth tunic without prosthesis, feeling good. The nurse immediately criticized her appearance as bad for the morale of the office. This moment crystallized the political dimensions of her choice. Why should she conceal her reality to protect others from confronting mortality or difference? The insistence on prosthesis forces women to dwell in the past rather than assess their changed bodies, encourages secret mourning instead of open healing, and isolates women from each other. Lord saw this isolation as social control, preventing solidarity around shared experiences. Her visible one-breastedness became an invitation to connection, a refusal of shame, and a challenge to beauty standards that erase women's lived reality. Confronting mortality became both the central challenge and greatest gift of Lord's cancer experience. Once I face death, what is there left to fear? The immediacy of death stripped away superficial concerns, leaving only what was essential. Rather than retreating into denial, Lord embraced this awareness as power. I have been to the edge of death, and I know that the place within me that rose to meet that knowledge is the source of my power. This warrior vision, facing death without embracing it, became her path to authentic living. The shadow of death didn't diminish life, but intensified it, making each moment more precious. This mortality consciousness stayed with her like a guardian angel over my left shoulder, transforming fear into creative energy. Lord exposes the cancer industrial complex, institutions profiting from treatment while neglecting prevention. The American Cancer Society collected over $1 billion across a decade, but spent less than 15% assisting patients. Its 194-member board included only one Black member, one labor representative, and no women in leadership, with pharmaceutical interests dominating decisions. The breast reconstruction industry exemplified profit-driven medicine. Surgeons pushed silicone implants costing $1,500 to $3,000, obsessing over making women look normal before they'd process their diagnosis. Most damning, mortality rates for conventionally treated breast cancer hadn't decreased in 40 years. Meanwhile, the ACS suppressed information about promising European alternatives, immunotherapy, dietary modifications, hormone treatments. Lord connects these failures to environmental causes. Cancer has distinct and identifiable causes, mainly exposures to chemical or physical agents in the environment, industrial pollutants, pesticides, food additives, radiation. Corporations and government bodies profit from treatment while allowing carcinogenic substances to persist. Her solution? Women taking militant responsibility through comprehensive self-education about treatment options, environmental causes, nutrition, and stress management, transforming from passive recipients into informed participants in their own healing. Lord distinguishes authentic self-affirmation from superficial positivity. After her mastectomy, she consciously imaged herself as a fighter rather than victim, visualization that strengthened resolve without denying reality. This differs sharply from victim-blaming suggestions that cancer patients weren't happy enough to prevent disease. The idea that happiness alone can insulate us from the inevitable is a dangerous rumor, she writes. Lord advocates for complex emotional landscapes that acknowledge pain, fear, and anger while cultivating resilience. Suppressing negative emotions only drives them deeper. What emerges is profound transformation. When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, it becomes less important whether I am unafraid. Courage isn't fear's absence, but determination to act despite it. When we dare to feel everything, rage at injustice, grief for loss, fear of what's coming, we become more fully human, more capable of authentic connection, more powerful in resisting systems demanding complicity through cheerful silence. The final movement in Lord's journey involves reclaiming her changed body, not returning to pre-cancer normal, but embracing transformation through radical self-acceptance. During recovery, she recognized she wouldn't trade her life, loved ones, or poetry to have her breast back. I was fighting the devil of despair for my own soul. This battle became both personal and political. Lord discovers that what she feared losing, her sexuality, femininity, power, wasn't located in her breast at all. I own my feelings and can attach them anywhere. This insight transforms her understanding of embodiment, allowing her to reclaim sexuality and wholeness on her own terms. Cancer becomes a gateway into the tapping and expansion of my own power, a crucible through which she emerges stronger. By refusing to hide through prosthesis or silence, she creates a new model of authenticity that challenges expectations and empowers others. In a world profiting from women's silence and shame, Lord's words remain urgent. Your scars aren't shameful. Your changed body isn't wrong. Your survival, messy, imperfect, visible, is itself revolutionary. What protects us isn't silence, but the fierce, collective power of women refusing to disappear.